all of us here at Beyond FM celebrated our asses off last year for a one-year anniversary. So we thought this year, we're going to do something a little more mature. Nah.
July 17th at Red Flag. Tower 74 and Beyond FM present the Beyond FM Birthday Bash. Starring Inimical Drive. I stand and fight, and I set this world on fire, burning down as the ashes rain will start it all over from the ground. Outrun the fall. Advance tickets on sale now for $15. Get $5 off checkout when you use promo code BeyondFM. Get your tickets now at Tower74Concerts.com. This is the Beyond FM Birthday Bash, July 17th at Red Flag. Brought to you by Beyond FM and Tower 74.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Thank you so much for checking out another episode of the show. Do want to remind you, as always, Rock Paper Podcast is brought to you by Roughneck Beard Company and American Rambler, located here in St. Louis over in the Maplewood area. Swing by the shop over on Manchester or shop 24/7 at roughneckbeardcompany.com. Use my code RPP15 for an exclusive 15% off all your favorite all-natural beard oils, beard balms, their junk powder, or any other fine products over there. You know, during the hot summer months, it may be tempting to shave, but did you know that having a beard can keep you cooler longer in the summer heat? Beards provide protection from UV rays and keep sweat off your face to keep you cooler longer in the hottest heat. Just make sure to keep your beard clean with Roughneck's house-made beard bar. All natural soap with milled oats and African black soap cleanses amazingly without stripping away your natural oils. And if you do decide to shave it off, do it with American Rambler's amazing pre-shave oils and Miracle Tonic Aftershave. Either way, they've got you covered. You can find it all at roughneckbeardcompany.com and use that code RPP15 during checkout. Also, big shout out to Heil Sound for their continued support and helping make this show sound great. Shop HeilSound.com today and get yourself some brand new gear. Hey, and if you haven't heard, I got a big show coming up. My first show back since COVID. We'll be at Focal Point in Maplewood, Missouri for my singer-songwriter storytelling showcase August 21st. I'm bringing along Andy Sitto from Denver, Colorado, and Nick Gussman, Karen Choi, and Anthony J. Russo. So come on out to that show. It's going to be an incredible evening. It's BYOB. Bring a snack. Bring a drink. Have a great evening with us. It's an intimate listening room experience. Four writers sitting on stage with their guitars, telling stories and playing some songs for you. Tickets available now at the Focal Point website. Check out the Facebook event for details. And come on out to the show with us. You can find me, of course, at rockpaperpodcast.com. Hit me up on the email, rockpaperpodcast@gmail.com. Any of the socials, I would love to hear from you. But with all that out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new show.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Matt McInerney from Luca Brasi, and you are listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Rock on.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Scissors beat paper, paper covers rock. Rock beats, scissors, Shane covers nonstop. Never know what new kind of guests that he's got coming at you. Live and direct on the spot. Could be rock, folk, country, or hip-hop, jazz. All kind of folks that he has. Could be an artist or a comedian to make you laugh on the
Rock Paper Podcast.
Double-decker fudge round, rolling round town. Shane coming at you live and direct from ground zero. He's your hero, he's your bestie. Rock Paper Podcast with Shane Presley.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with the guys of Luca Brasi. Welcome to the show, guys.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, this is cool, man. I'm really excited to be hanging out. This is a little different, as I think this is the first time I've done like mixed with like somebody on the line. I did actually call into my own show one time. It was a long story, but it was a snowstorm hit, and all my friends were in the one location, and they were like really bummed that I wasn't able to make it, because I was driving from, they were in St. Louis, I was in Wentzville, and I'm like, luckily there was like three audio engineers in the band, so they all like figured out a way to hook up the phone, and I called in, and they recorded it all, and it sounds incredible. But like, I'm just like, I'm sitting on the couch hosting the show, and they're all in the room together and stuff. So
that's awesome.
It was pretty interesting for sure. It was a different way to do a podcast, but this is fun. New challenge. As Matt is on the line and hanging here with Bill, but do you guys want to properly introduce yourself so everybody knows your voices?
Go for it. Oh, okay. Bill Ryder. I play keyboards and do backing vocals in Luca Brasi.
My name is... Sorry, Bill. Oh, I thought... go, please.
And on the line, we have Matt McInerney. Introduce yourself, Matt.
Oh, this is Matt McInerney. Hi. I sing in Luca Brasi. I write lyrics and do the artwork, and I'm going to be the first one to say that Bill does much more than plays keyboards in the band. Bill is the producer and maker of this new record. I wanted to say that.
There we go. There you go. We have brand new record. I mean, you guys have kind of teased online about a new album coming soon, and that is all finished.
Yeah, we're right at the very end. It's we're just... waiting to get all of the final stuff back, and we have we're going to do vinyl, so that takes a decade to get done. So that'll be later on in the process, but we hopefully we should get it on streaming and iTunes and all that jazz. I'm saying a week or two. I mean, in this month of June.
Sure.
So hopefully when you hear this, you will also be able to go listen to it. That's the plan.
There we go. This is the first time we're all like hanging out talking about this project. I did want to kind of go back a bit and just kind of, I know this group's been going for quite a while. It's been what, 10 years since the last record, right?
I don't remember. Is it 10?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, it is 10. This would have been the 10.
Yeah. It's about 11 now. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And we, I know it's like, obviously, kind of this one has been a while in the making for sure. Everybody's antsy for some new tunes, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to go back a little bit and like how some of the story, how this group came to be and stuff, how you guys met and things and decided to put the group together.
Nice. I like it. Macko, take it away.
Sure. We've been friends for a really, really, really long time. And this crew of people started playing as a four-piece. I don't know how far maybe we go back. I mean, there's Urge stuff. There's Life Without Wayne stuff. There's a lot of pre-Bandage that came before Luca Brasi. And then we started as a little four piece with Jerry Jost, myself, Josh, and Mike Jost, Josiah Werner, for those keeping score at home. And we were a four piece. We were called Seven for about 5 minutes, and then we became Luca Brasi. But Bill was always a part of it. He was like, in some way, shape, or form, maybe not actually playing, but you're adjacent of us. And then when we started writing songs, we went to record with John Pozzoni. Bill comes in, puts all these keys on it, sings on it as well. And then we were like, oh, well, Bill needs to be a part of the band. And then so then Bill started playing out with us, writing out, just became a regular member. And this is probably 2004-ish, yeah, something. I don't know.
I would have to, right, I'd have to look it up.
and so then we got to record two records together. We played out a zillion times, and then and you know, other things are happening. Urge realigns, right, the band. Did I have that right, Bill?
That's right. Yeah, the Urge was on indefinite hiatus during this whole thing, and then the Urge kind of got back together and started working on something. And then we had multiple bands to worry about at that point.
Yeah, which was awesome. So we basically, you know, started to kind of like figure that out. And then we never stopped playing. We just basically went on hiatus, I guess, to use your word, Bill. And I moved to Kansas City, which made it difficult to get together on Wednesday nights and write and drink as we would do. And so, just kind of like we played a couple shows. Like last year, we played two shows, one in St. Louis and one in Kansas City. And then COVID happened. And then that really became the catalyst for us to get back in the room, so to speak, even though I'm not trying to give anything away here, but we never were in a room together for this record, which is totally bizarre and a completely new approach. But I would say that the result is something very unique. This is very long-winded, and I apologize, but maybe our best collection of music that we have ever produced as a band.
Yeah,
we did not get to, we did not write any of them as one group. What happened was Jerry was getting kind of itchy to do something, and he had come up with this one guitar part. And I was like, dude, send it over. Let's send it over and see what happens. And that night, just as a kind of a challenge, I was like, oh, just send it. And we're going to make something right now. And so I very quickly put drums and bass on it, like very kind of rudimentary bass line and a beat and a little bit of keyboards, and sent it back to him. And I genuinely think that Mako probably like sat up in bed or something. It was like, you know, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, a million voices cry out, you know, it's like you texted me and he goes, hey, are you guys working on something? And actually that's the song that became See the Sky, which is the last song on the record. I think then once you called me and we were like, hey, you know, if we do this like six or seven more times and do one of our trademark cool covers, that's a record, right? I was like, I think we should maybe give this a shot. Mike and Josiah were totally all over it. And then at that point, we just start sending tracks around. Like, right. So Jerry would send me a guitar part or maybe even two separate guitar parts. And I would kind of line them up into a logical arrangement and put a click track on it. And then Mike would just go into the rehearsal space by himself and just put like just very straightforward record, you know, like two mics and a kick drum mic basically was the recording setup. And then he'd send those drum tracks back to me. Actually, he would drop off a memory card in my mailbox. That's how that happened.
Very 1978.
It was like The Conversation or Three Days of the Condor or something. It was like, oh, here. And so then we would send it to Josh, and Josh would put bass on it with just a little digital recorder. And then we would just kind of package it all up and send it to Mako, and he'd put vocals on it. And then I would maybe put vocals on it, like harmony vocals, and then we'd go, okay, that's a finished song. And that's basically how they all went. There are two songs on it that were born the last time we were all together, which was in 2000, and, you know, before you moved to Kansas City. And one of them we've actually played live, kind of, like different lyrics, different arrangement. speaking of long-winded, I'm now monologuing. But we kind of just did it all like that, and that's how it was written. And then once we had all the songs together, we were like, oh, yep, no, this is an album. I guess we better do this for real.
Right.
And that all happened separately as well. So Macko recorded all of his vocals in Kansas City. Mike recorded all of his drums in like a day and a half at Sawhorse with Jason McIntyre. And then me and Jerry recorded the guitars in our rehearsal space. And me and Josh recorded the bass tracks in our rehearsal space. And then I recorded all the keyboards and my vocals at home. And there you have it. Like, that was it. It all kind of happened very quickly, really. Like, all the songs were written, I'd say, in a couple of months. Like, yeah. That, because we just kept going, okay, yeah. You know, here, do something with this. And, you know, so I don't think anybody didn't want to be the person that didn't hit the ball back over the net. So there was a lot of, like, it's like, oh, no, I got it. Here you go. Have it back. So, and that's a fun experience, because everything was like a little present. Like, I'd wake up in the morning and go, oh, here's a new bass track. Oh, cool.
Yeah. I've been actually keeping quite busy recording with a lot of different people throughout the pandemic and everything through 2020. And I often was asking people, like, do you find yourself being able to be more creative with more time on your hands? Because a lot of people were stuck at home, you know, no live shows, no touring, no, you know, gigs, or hardly anything going on for quite a while. Or do you find it's more hard, you know, more difficult to write because of, you know, just people, you know, it's hard to be creative. I feel like it's hard to be wanting to get out and write when it's such a bummer and stuff. Yeah. So, but like, it seems like you guys really capitalized and made the most of having some time to, you know, make all this come together and stuff.
Yeah, so. I think so. Macko, you want to start?
Well, I was just going to say that to that point, I mean, just to the greater point, I don't know what I would have done without this project during that kind of run during the pandemic. I don't know, like, right. Just having the luxury and the opportunity to be able to make things with these guys again, first of all, I don't think it would have happened if the virus hadn't hit. I don't think we would have found ourselves in this position for exactly what you're saying, Shane, about having time. We were forced to have time, and now it was like, oh, and now, but now we also had five guys who wanted to do something and make a thing. And so that was essential, I think, in allowing us to do it, because we all wanted to do it. But then, so there's that track. But then I'd say the other thing is, what fueled me personally is everything that was going around in the world at the time while this was happening. So this was definitely like, we were taking the notes and turning them into these songs of the world around us while it was happening. And that was a very unique experience. And one that I would have never thought we would have had the opportunity to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I certainly don't mean to, you know, it seems clueless and shitty to say something, to use the word like grateful, while all the havoc that this has wrought in the world and all the, an unimaginable number of people that have died from this thing.
Right.
But like without that moment where you go, hey, I can sit here and just do this for a few days, you know, like it was kind of a blessing.
Right.
So grateful is not the word, because obviously I would rather, you know, I'd rather the record didn't exist, maybe. Yeah. Like, if I could, you know, it was a blessing. It really was. That's the best word I guess I can think of.
Well, and the process was cathartic. It was completely cathartic, because all this crap is happening in various levels. You know, we've got the virus, we've got a president who was doing X, and then we also had the social justice kind of awakening, and all of these things were happening, and it was a pretty tumultuous summer last summer, and that's when I think most of this was born, and I think that's where most of this has grown out of. And I don't know, we ended up kind of making a concept record that wasn't blatantly like hitting you over the head, but the concept is the concept, because it all happened at once. Unlike a record where we play out all these songs for years and then we go into a studio and start to record them. This is like, we're writing separately in remote locations around the globe. And then thanks to Bill, you have to have someone who's going to collect and make and piece together. And that's where Bill came in. He was dedicated to doing it, worked his ass off doing it, and now we're sitting here talking about it as a result.
So what, Bill, what, how about you? Like, as far as the producing end of it, like, I mean, had you ever done much of, like, to this extent? Like,
no, absolutely. That's, it's funny. Cause I was talking with, Jason McIntyre, you know, I got this, well, not recently when we were first doing the drums and, with our mastering engineer, Brad Sarno. And I was like, I've been messing around in, timeline based recording software, basically since such a thing existed, right? You know, like say, like Mark of the Unicorn and Cakewalk and things, you know, like when I was in high school, like, you had, you know, 2 megabytes of RAM and let's, you know, I was like, but this is the first time I've ever had to like finalize something, right? It was like, nope, this is it. This is done. You got to finish it now. So it's been kind of an interesting process because I think that you know, I'm not the first, I don't know what the origin of the quote is, but you know, art isn't finished, it's abandoned or whatever. So at a certain point you go, well, that's, it's not a, it, I would keep messing with it, but I guess we've got to be good. We got to be done with it now. So, that has been interesting because I have, and me and Mako together and separately have hours and hours of stuff, that would one day see the light of day, but it's mostly the fun part is the process of it. The fun part is the making of it, not necessarily the delivering of it, but I'm happy to deliver this one. I'm very excited and proud of it. And I think it's going to be, I'm excited for people to hear it. I'm excited to hear what people think of it. That's for sure. But it was, we did have some technical gaps, maybe, I guess, for lack of a better word. Like, I think at one point, because me and Matt had been working on some stuff prior to this and just with kind of very simpler setup. And I think I called you or texted you and was like, hey, you're getting a package on Friday, and it was like, you know, new mic, new interface, new preamp, new, I was like, this is okay. We're going to do this. So we'll figure it out later, but just here, you know, it'll be on your doorstep. Be on the lookout for it. And, same thing with Josh. Like we spent like 3 hours on the phone trying to get his, like, he has a computer that's like from War Games and we're trying to like do, trying to do like record bass. I was like, just all we need is just recording. We're just doing the demo, man. It's fine. And we couldn't really even get that done. So that was another thing. I think I got a little digital recorder and was like, here, I'm going to load this up. And you just, you know, but then he took to it like a fish to water, man. He was like, no, I got it. And so then he was like doing all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah.
And yeah. And so I think I gave Mike a box of mics, with a Zoom, it was like a kick drum mic and a snare drum mic plugged into the bottom of a 2-channel Zoom with then the 2 built-in mics, armed. And he just pointed the Zoom like at kind of as overheads and put the mics in the kick and the snare and recorded and sent it to me. And, one of those, there's a song on the album called Ground Floors Descend. And that is that's the drum track. The drum track is his original, is from the practice spot. Cause we were like, I love how dry the snare drum was. And I dug its kind of like ramshackle, vibe. And I was like, we need to keep that one. So, you know, so you recorded these drums. So that kind of stuff. There are a couple of examples of that, in the record where some of the tracks are actually from the original demos. It was like, oh, that's fine. That's good. I like that sound. I like the way it sounds.
Yeah.
So,
well, you guys, send me a little sneak peek to listen to before coming over, and I really enjoyed it. It was just a lot of fun. I was kind of telling Bill prior to, but it was just like, especially the first half of the record is very kind of pop positive, like it's like, well, really upbeat, like I don't know, it just like overall I feel like that's there's like a lot of just feel good to it, like just kind of, you know, makes you want to get up and dance a little more and stuff. But in the second half of the record, there's definitely some different tones and a little heavier guitars and different things going and a little more rocking and stuff. So like, it was nice to hear quite a bit of, you know, dynamic to the record and stuff also in these 12 tracks. So, I picked one called Stand Down, which appears as track 5, I believe.
That's right in the middle.
Right, and this is sort of like also kind of both of those worlds. Like it, the first half, I feel, is kind of a little lighter, poppy.
See, Shane gets it.
Right. And then right. And then the second half, you guys just kind of get wild and, you know.
Yeah, it's a turn. It starts as like, it starts, it sounds like a Crowded House song that turns into a Nine Inch Nails song.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Well, this was a ton of fun, and I always, when I listen to music, for me, I often think of the live show, and I think about how watching you guys do this stuff live on stage, and then how the crowd's going to react, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun, man. So I'm excited to make that happen soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
So
yeah, same here.
But Matt, you got anything you want to add to Stand Down? Is there anything come to mind?
Well, sure. I think this is one of the that Bill had mentioned earlier. There were two tracks that were, that were loosely kind of carried over from pre-COVID times to post-COVID times. And this was one of them. This was one that we actually had. It was, as Bill mentioned earlier, different lyrics and stuff. But we actually played this out, I believe, once that I remember. But I remember this was written whenever after I moved to Kansas City. So it's definitely a melancholy, pretty dark cut, and it holds that mood for sure. And then the lyrics were just tweaked slightly to kind of bring it into this kind of suite of songs. And and I love how it turned out on the record. I think it's pretty great.
Yeah. So this will be readily available real soon.
Yes.
And
hopefully, as we're speaking.
Yeah. And
in the future.
Right. So keep an eye out, and you can follow Luca Brasi on your Facebook and Instagram for more updates and stuff. But I can't wait to see you guys back on a stage because it's been quite a while for me. I know you guys played. You mentioned earlier playing Del Mar Hall with Hounds a while back, and I think for everybody, it's been a long time since I've been on stages and stuff.
Yeah, so. When was that? What year was that?
I think that was maybe like 3 years or something a while back. Maybe 2 years ago.
Because then we went to Kansas City.
Yeah. Right.
And played in Kansas City. It was like a rock and roll weekend.
2 years ago. That's right. I think, well, it certainly wasn't last year. And
no. For some reason, I feel like it was longer than that, but I'm sure you're right. That would have been like, yeah.
I remember getting weird with you guys in the basement of Blueberry Hill and in the Duck Room, right?
That's down there. Right.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of good times over the years, playing these songs and stuff. So I'm excited to take this new batch of songs, especially since these, like you're saying, these aren't road tested songs. You guys haven't been out there playing them and getting a crowd reaction, so. I can't wait for that moment when everybody starts hearing this brand new material live.
It's definitely it is the most, and it's something that I had always wanted to do. And me and Mike Jost had talked about it a couple times. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we kind of stripped away, and I don't want to get too philosophical about it, but you take away, I think all musicians are like this. And, but you, like, you take away the things that you hide behind, you know, you kind of remove your tricks and when if you're all standing in a room together, and you have your weaponry, right? You, it's like, no, this is the thing I do here when we're at that part, and here's the kind of thing that I play when we're playing live. And in this context, I think we were forced to not only by just distance and technology, we were kind of forced to make some choices that I don't think we would have done were we to all together. But also we kind of had to throw away our usual bag of tricks and kind of go for some things that that were based on, you know, just how we were feeling and what we could do and like Mako says, like the time and what was going on. But I like, and so we'd always wanted to do something like that. Mm-hmm. Mike and I had mentioned multiple times about, wouldn't it be cool if we just wrote a song where we didn't rely on, you know, volume or, you know, it's like, you know, we just like, we're going to, you know, I'm going to go make a beat, or I'm going to go play on an electronic drum kit, or I'll do it on a keyboard. And it's like, oh yeah. And I could, you know, and Jerry can play. I was like, and Jerry could play the keyboards, you know, like that kind of jazz. So, I'm excited about that part of it because it sounds like us, but it's very much unlike anything we've done before. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, if you don't mind, I was just going to co-sign on some of that, A, and B, say there are things that happen on this record that would never have happened if we were standing in a room. We would have been like, oh, we'll double that. We'll double that verse right there. Or we'll double that. Or no, why would there only be one thing here? We did not. There was not a lot of it. We basically, things kind of like were assembled by Bill. Ultimately, he became the arranger. And kind of put some things together. I mean, and very few times were there ever like, oh, we should really do this or that. It was like, oh, no, that's cool. You start hearing it, and that becomes the jam. And so ultimately, I think and my cousin Tom, who I sent these jams to, he was like, it's what's so cool is that this virus, this situation, it became an element that helped craft these songs. Like, we basically had to use this. It helped compose the songs, the situation did. And so now we've got these jams. We don't even know. We've never even been in a room. And I honestly cannot wait to get in a room and play these songs with these people. And then right. I can't even imagine what it'll be like to do it in front of other people once we figure out how to play these again. It's, I don't know, but it's a thrilling problem to have, because it's not a problem at all, but it's exciting. And I think we have unique results as a result. And again, I have to again tip the cap to Bill Ryder over here, who decided he would do it, who said he would do it and actually did it. And, you know, he sent me, like he just said, he sent me a microphone and stuff to record. Like, he was like, no, we're going to make this happen. And and then we, as a result, we made it happen. So, yeah. And now I'll shut up.
I think, I mean, as we've seen, like, I think a lot of, I think, like Jimmy Fallon, Tonight Show, and so I think they kind of got into that, too, where they were, like, sending people earbuds and or AirPods or whatever, so like that way they can have a better experience. Like, so, but you could tell, like, some people were more adept, you know, okay, I have no problem, and then other people were like trying to figure it out, like, while they're in the interview still and stuff. Like, but there was like, I mean, everybody was trying to adapt to the technology and how to figure out how to record and how to stay productive during all this. So that's and this is a beautiful example of that hard work coming together, man. This record sounds great, and
oh, thanks.
And I'm excited to, like I said, get this out there to everybody and show off what you guys did. And,
thanks.
Awesome. Do you think as obviously we made it work like we did? Do you think going forward in the future, this is something you guys want to continue to record this way, or is this
that's an excellent question?
Right.
I would say that's an interesting question. I feel like I wouldn't be. I think that we've learned so much about ourselves and our creative process individually, and how it fits in with the rest of us. I think that it could be both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I think that I think this proves that we don't need to shy away from like using certain technologies to accomplish a goal if we're all united in that goal, right? Like, so if we're all on the same page, I don't think it matters how you make it, right? It's if the group is aligned and all pointed in the same direction, you could do it with your cell phone or, you know, with a drum machine or whatever, you know, like, just, you could make things out of whatever tools you have at hand. And as long as the collective is focused, then
sure.
I don't think it really ultimately matters. But that's an interesting point. I don't think that we would, because I think it's more fun to, you know, to be together,
right.
And then, you know, then after rehearsal, then you go to the bar. That's the important part. Right. I mostly got into music business for like the part after where you go hang out with all of your friends and talk about how awesome you are. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you were amazing. Sure. Great. I God, you're a genius. That's so good.
Well, I do the same with the pod. We have a great time recording, but then usually it's the hang after where the mics turn off, like then when the real stuff starts happening, and that's the interesting stuff. But
right.
You know, it's always it's still just a great time. But yeah, just the social interaction, hanging with your buds and stuff. It's you can't replace that for sure.
I agree. Yeah, that's but I dearly hope that we get an opportunity to do a fourth one, because I think that we originally didn't think that a third one was when we first started writing, when we wrote Stand Down and what eventually became The King,
mm-hmm.
which are songs 5 and 6, I think, on the record. The intention was, it was like, oh, we'll just get together some things and maybe do a couple of covers and we'll do an EP and we're going to call it Early Retirement, because at that point we were like, well, who knows when we'll ever get the chance to do this again. And then even that was kind of difficult to pull off. And we kind of went, oh, well, you know, someday or whatever. And you know, so the fact that this happened is a gift. But like, I hope we get to do another one. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah,
you guys,
we'll call that one early retirement.
You've mentioned covers, but was there a cover on this?
Yeah, it's called "Digging in the Dirt." It's a Peter Gabriel song,
right.
Off of his album "Us" from '92.
All right,
and it is a song that we've been playing live for a while, and we. Mm-hmm. So we did have a recording of that from our practice space from, you know, 2004 or whatever. What was interesting is that after we had started doing the process where we were trading tracks and the evolution and the growth of the individual songs that came out of that, I suggested, I was like, you know what we need to do is we need to apply this approach to the other two songs that quote existed and the Peter Gabriel cut. And so we'll make, so it's all of the demos are going to match, from a fidelity standpoint, right? They'll all sound like the same project. But then we'll stumble upon things that didn't occur to us at the time. And then we can apply that to this new version of it. And then we'll have a complete blueprint of what exactly it is we're trying to do. But all three songs did evolve like rather considerably. So that was another example of like just taking the time that we had and the approach that we'd already kind of developed between each other and go, you know what, we're going to, in spite of this, the fact that this song is quote finished, let's apply this, kind of this acumen to that as well and see what comes out of it. And, I'm reasonably confident that Stand Down would not sound like it does now without, the basic arrangement is the same, mm-hmm. right? Like, right. But the texture and the tone of it, and like the pace of it, and in fact, in spite of the fact that it kind of starts off as a little bit laid back, right? I think it's faster than what the demo was.
Interesting.
I think because for some of these things, making a click track for Mike to play along to, we had to kind of we have to decide exactly what's going on here,
right.
And I think it's actually a little bit faster. I think I picked it up a little bit. So that kind of stuff is that was the fun part. And forgive me. Oh yeah, but yeah, we could do it this way or the other way, like the traditional fashion. I'm pretty confident that we will at some point. We might be 60 years old, but
yeah. I mean, well, I think that the other thing that I think this process has given us, even if we can still, you know, when we can all safely get in a room and blah blah blah, do that thing. Knowing that I can come back to Kansas City where I live and we can record, we can still play the game. Like maybe we split the difference a little bit and we do a little bit of building live and then that could start the foundation of some of these tracks but then we can split off and go do our things. And, but I think Bill, you alluded to this earlier, just the idea of being more open to things, not like we walk right into the practice space and we go right to our spots and we pick up the things that we play, it opens it more up. Like, you know, Jerry, if you've got a beat, then just to sing a beat into your phone and then send it over to Mike. And then we can start to kind of play off of those things. I mean, that kind of being open to things like that, not that we were ever closed, but we were just more in the habit of doing those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And being in this situation breaks all of those habits and all of those rules that we had previously set up and those structures are out the window. And if everyone is open to it, Bill, as you mentioned earlier, then cool things are going to happen. And if people are receptive to each other's cool things, then you've got something kind of special going on. And I think we have a little something special.
I agree. Jerry plays acoustic guitar on this song or on this album like three times. Three different songs have acoustic guitar in it.
Wait,
at least two. Go See This Guy. See This Guy and Cut Divide, right? No. Yeah, Bracing. Okay. Bracing and See the Sky. There's one other one I'm forgetting. Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, like, you know, that's not the kind of thing that can happen if you're all standing around making noise. It's like, that's kind of a difficult thing to pull off. It's like, oh, hold on, let me mic up this acoustic guitar and, you know, we're going to figure out.
This is a studio project that is now going to have to be transferred into something that becomes a live product. And we have not done that.
No, right. Mike and I were talking about that the other day. I was like, okay, so how is some of this going to work? And I was like, I don't know. That's the fun part.
Sweet man.
I don't have a clue yet.
That's where the beer and the sweat come in.
Yeah. Let's talk about When We Were Strong, another track that I picked out that I really enjoyed this one. I felt like if not one of the heavier songs on the track on this record, definitely one you can get a little rowdy to and have some fun and you know, maybe bang your head to it. And this was just a fun, you know, especially like, again, you know, kind of having some different sounds coming through. This one really kind of by the end of the towards the end of the record there and really getting heavier and stuff was cool. So
yeah.
Again, think you went and called yourself a friend again. Well, that just is a lie. You went ahead and made a scene again. And times when we were young, I believed in no other one. I believed in no other one. Was strong. I believed in no other one. I believed in no other one. Do what you want to. Say what you want to say. Hate what you want to. Over and over and. So I think you fucked it up again. A friend again. Well, that just is a lie. You went ahead and made a scene again. In times when we were young, I believed in no other one. I believed in no other one. In times when we were strong, I believe to no other one. I believe to no other one.
I agree. This one is, I think, on its face, or certainly in the first eight bars, is the most maybe traditional Luca Brasian approach, right? It's kind of very, it's, you know, kind of helmety. It's definitely got a dash of Helmet in it. Then it goes to this kind of keyboard breakdown thing, which is a completely different animal. So there's a lot of things happening in it, a lot of juxtaposition, which
right.
All of us are kind of into. It's like, it's a, There's some debate as to the origin and strict definition of the term sneak rock, but it is an approach that is referenced often about that, you know, the kind of the juxtaposition of brutality and beauty and when, like, or like soft and loud and restrained and, you know, face melting. And I think that that's a pretty cool example of it, because it does break down into something that's almost, that is of a, it's similar to Peter Gabriel, like the bit, the little keyboard thing is, could sounds like it could be in Digging in the Dirt, which is,
yeah,
you know, pretty cool. It's the one thing I do want to mention on the LP. There's 12 songs, and it's because we couldn't bear to cut anything. It is going to be double vinyl, which is pretty hilarious, but. But each, because there's 12 songs, so there's 3 songs on each side, and they are arranged in such a way that that those 3 songs individually become like a related chunk. So like Stand Down, See the Sky, and When We Were Strong is, wait, is that right?
Stand Down, The King. But then it goes into...
Oh, so it's Ground Floor's Descend, Stand Down, The King.
Yes, that's right. And then...
When We Were Strong, Digging the Dirt, See the Sky. Yeah, so they all kind of fit together like on a subset level of these 3 songs are either audibly or thematically tied together.
Right.
So that part is also kind of fun to figure out and arrange and like what order do we put these things in, and you know that, so that part has been, it's as an intellectual exercise, really a lot of fun. So that's the, yeah, I don't know why, but that's going to be fun to listen to them as just like a 3 song thing. Like put on side C and here it is from start to finish, and it's kind of like its own little EP.
I also think about when it comes to When We Were Strong, just like, I mean, live, it's just going to be there. I mean, there's something really killer. And for a minute we had gotten rid of Mike's clicks, and then they came back in just because of that 3 clicks and a 1, 2, 3, double.
Yeah.
But, and then it's just abusive in a great way. But then it goes really into the most mellow, like some of the more mellow moments are in that song as well, which it all leads right back to what Bill was talking about, that kind of, you know, the yin and the yang of what we enjoy doing. We really showcase it on that particular cut.
And I like, there's some, you know, like you're talking about maybe, like at a beer night, Peter Gabriel or something, you know, there's that, like some, sounds like an organ or something. There's definitely, some weird, middle there solo.
Yeah. There is a lot of, incidental kind of racket happening in a bunch of songs where I was just like, you know, what'd be cool here is, and sometimes it just came out of something that I thought I heard already, like something that was kind of playing in my mind, playing tricks on me. I was like, oh, that's kind of, that's, I can hear it like in my mind. So I'm just going to put it in there. So, there are, each song has a kind of like a traditional keyboard part.
Mm-hmm.
But then, the songs also have some sort of, textural or percussive element that's coming from somewhere and just kind of shows up and goes away, you know, type of stuff. And that's part of where I don't really know how we're going to do that. I'm going to be using a lot of loop stations, I think, probably in some of these when we play it live. But that kind of stuff was a lot of fun, and it was also because of my love of old keyboards. Right. I just have a pile of stuff that I don't really get a chance to bust out. You know, I would just take things and plug them in, and I go, "What does this sound like?"
Yeah.
Like, cool, great. Let's put that somewhere.
Just what the doctor ordered.
There's only, I don't use any, there aren't any virtual keyboards on the album. That's not true. I did keep one thing. So there are a couple of songs that have tracks in them that are actually from the demo. Like Jerry did an Ebow part on When We Were Strong. That might even be what you're talking about. There's an Ebow guitar that's going on through the entire middle of the song.
Yeah.
And that's from the demo. Like Jerry was like, no, that's what I, that's great. That's what I want. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, cool. But yeah, there is, there's, you know, piano parts and a wide range of vintage analog synthesizers that are just,
yeah.
that are there for points. You know, they do that. Like, okay, what was that? What was that? So that part is, that was a lot of fun too. Yeah. It was like, I think I disappeared. I kind of went radio silence for like a week and a half at the end of the thing. I was like, I'm just going to, I'll have something to share with the class in about a week. I'm just going to sit here in the beat laboratory and just make a bunch of racket.
Yeah. Well, again, keep an eye out for the new tunes and coming. Hopefully when you hear this, you're going to be able to readily find it or on all your streaming platforms. Yeah. And you saying fall?
We're aiming for October.
For vinyl?
Yeah, that's the... Well, we're aiming for October to have a show and also to have LPs in hand. That's the plan. And it's... that's, you know, no promises can be made on either...
Right.
On either regard. But that's the plan. And yeah, so hopefully, like I was just saying, we got proofs. Got album artwork proofs. The fact that I'm going to be able to pick this thing up in my hands and like, look at it. And since it's a double, it's like a gatefold, and it's just like a bunch of... And Mac, I was a genius with the visual
you're
arts.
You're kind.
And it really is a pretty-looking piece. It's going to be cool. And it's like, yeah, it's clear. The LPs are going to be clear.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It'll be dope.
I love... I'm a bit of a vinyl enthusiast myself, and I got a pretty solid collection going, and for fairly newer collection. And but one of my favorite things, like, there's a group I really love, Rival Sons, and and they're super cool, but they did a record a while back, and like when you did like the pre-order, you could essentially possibly get like a one of a kind record, because they allowed you to choose your what color you wanted, if you wanted blood splatter or whatever, you know, these different things. And I was like, I don't know what kind of deal that, how, what that cost him or however that worked out. But like, but you, you know, instead of like, okay, we have 100 of this color or 100 of this color or something like that, they, you could literally pick and choose. And I was like, man, it's very cool. Yeah. But it's just like, it's, as a fan, it's cool to see that they're giving those like kind of options. There's a lot of different things coming, and then vinyl's making such a resurgence. And you know, we got all kinds of cool things happening. But yeah, clear, or, you know, just like, obviously all of it's cool, but any, like, just those little different colors and things always make it more fun, I think.
I agree. Same here. I have always been, but then recently, and this is no offense to like streaming services or including people who enjoy or prefer listening to their music that way, I like the album format. Like, that's the way I like to listen to music. And even if you say, I'm going to listen to, you know, Us by Peter Gabriel on Spotify, even at the end of that, Spotify decides that you need to hear something else.
Right.
And I can't stand that. It's like, no, I want to let that, like, let it linger, right? Like, let yourself sit with what just happened. Like, when, and I said this to Jerry, when was the last time you sat and listened to, like, The Beatles' Rubber Soul? Just sat and just went and listened to the thing, and when it was over, you stopped listening to music altogether. It's become so ubiquitous that it's hard to fathom what that's like. So I like the deliberate nature of it, where you have to, not only do you have to pick it up and put it on the platter and drop the needle, and you're like, okay, now I am listening to this thing intentionally. But to continue listening, you have to participate, right? You have to turn it over. So I'm a big fan of that. And also then when it's done, and you can digest that collection of stuff as one thing. And I'm a big fan of that. And I certainly Spotify and Pandora and all that jazz have their place, and I use them. They're, you know, if I'm driving and I'm just like I've got a playlist and all that jazz, but I like the fact that you have to deliberately participate in the process.
Right.
And then when it's over, it's done. Like, you know, when the song is over, then it's just quiet for a little bit and you can kind of wrestle with what you're listening to. And I hate when the algorithm just throws something else at me. And like, we've been listening to our demos on SoundCloud, And when you get to the demos on, when you get to the end of the demo on SoundCloud, it decides you need to play something else. I'm like, oh, no, I'm trying to listen to something. Don't tell me what to listen to.
It's the way of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Netflix has a button now that's just says play anything.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Oh my God.
Don't know what you want to watch. Just hit the you're feeling lucky button and they'll just play something.
So you're an imbecile.
All right.
Here's Netflix. Let's play something. It seems odd.
Which is the same. Well, it's the future version of being able to, you know, because a lot of television is passively consumed, right? You know, nobody is really watching like HDTV all the time.
No, because you're on two other devices doing that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's true too. But it's background. You know, it's like, oh, you know, every now and then you look up at the TV while you're doing something else and you go, I cannot believe this is the house they picked or whatever. and that's, nobody's really actively looking at that. So I guess that's Netflix's answer to just turning on the TV. So something's on, just turn on Netflix and hit the button and something's on. I was like, oh, I don't know. What is it? Yeah, it's Love, Death, and Robots. So I'm sure that'll be fine.
Well, I've been going around asking some of these silly questions, and nice. I thought it'd be fun to get your guys' take on some of these. And speaking of movies and TV, I've been asking, what's a show you wish you were in, or a movie you wish you were in? Is there a certain world that you guys think, that'd be pretty wild to live in that world?
That is fascinating.
Can I just shout, Mandalorian, Star Wars in the world. Yeah. Mandalorian is the show. I'll pass the mic to Bill Ryder.
What would you be do? What would you as what though? What are you doing in the Outer Rims?
I don't care. Whatever. I just want to be in it and looking around in it and feeling it and being a part of it.
And keeping your head down.
Shopkeep number two. I'm shopkeep number two.
Didn't awesome. Jason Sudeikis getting quite a bit of heat about
punching Baby Yoda?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, his stormtrooper punched Grogu in the head.
Yeah, right.
Oh well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people got upset by that.
The story has yet to be told on old Grogu.
Right.
That's right. He might deserve it at some point.
He might be. Yeah. Like all kinds of cute little kids grow up to be mass murderers in the Star Wars universe. So who knows?
No, especially this new one. I love it. It's great. So Bill,
what's that?
What's your answer? What?
Oh yeah. I don't know. There are a lot of things that influence my like kind of aesthetic sensibilities. So, you know, my first reaction is Blade Runner because that's
the one that looks the coolest.
But it doesn't really look like a fun place to hang out.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, it's like, it looks cool. So, yeah, I maybe think something like that. You know, Star Trek.
All right.
Ooh. I'll go with Star
Trek. All right. Look at this. Push and pull.
You know, yeah, it's a lot of, you know, it's cool looking, but, you know, we've done away with a lot of the problems of the infancy of our species in the Star Trek universe. So I'm kind of down with that idea.
Yeah.
And you get to, if I could snap my fingers and make one wish come true, it would be to have a teleporter, to have it like I would be able to, like, if I could, we could just all teleported to Kansas City.
All right.
Just beam right in and go, hey, what's up, man?
If you like that
sandwich.
Idea, that's cool.
I don't know if, I don't know when it's, if it, or whatever, but I know there was St. Louis to Kansas City was an option for that Hyperloop thing.
Yes.
That might be as close as we're going to get to teleporting for a while. Like, but
I would take it. I would take a super train or a speed train, a bullet train of any sort in this country. That'd be amazing.
That'd be pretty wild to make it to Kansas City in like a half an hour or something, like, you know, whatever it is.
Could come in for lunch.
Yeah, right.
What about you?
I don't know, man.
Tables turned.
Yeah. I often hear people say stuff like, and kind of the same thing you're saying, like, I don't know that they'd be fun, but people say stuff like, you know, Walking Dead or Breaking Bad. And I'm like, yeah, those are great shows, but I don't know that I want to live in that world.
Yeah. No thanks.
Mainly because I'm a super fan and I think I don't know that it'd be like, great to just be doing the office work, but I love the office.
Oh, well, there you go.
And just the That cast of characters makes me laugh all the time. So.
Well, you don't really... I don't know exactly how much paper selling was going on that show. Both US and UK and all of the other iterations across the world.
Sure.
So I think it seems like a pretty laid-back work environment.
Yeah, but...
I feel like.
I don't know. I enjoy that show a lot.
Yeah, so. Me too. I'm about due for a rewatch,
I think. There you go. All right, what about dream duet or collaboration? Is there somebody that you guys would love to invite to record on a Luca Brasi record or something?
Boy, I don't know where I'd even stop.
Yeah.
Anybody.
Yeah. If you're interested, you would come and play. I would love to come and play. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
You guys ever had any featured players like that? Any kind of...
Well, John Pizzone. I mean, John played... although technically, I mean, that was, you know... When on the first Luca Brasi record, me and... I mean, John Pizzone produced it, but John also played some stuff on it, and so did I. So we kind of... We were just like the, hey, how do we get that... Oh, let's make some noise.
Yeah.
I think you guys called me, actually, and said... I was at home, like... Yeah, like eating mac and cheese and watching Star Trek probably. And like, and somebody called me. He's like, hey, can you come down here and record this thing real quick? I was like, oh yeah, sure. I'll come in. Just like did a vocal thing. I was like, yep. Okay. Thanks. Bye. So, but, you know, we're all such fans of, and this might sound like a pat kind of cliche answer, but we're all such fans of so many different kinds of people that really who could say,
sure.
But like, you know, I really wouldn't know where to start. Like, you know, I mean, obviously Peter Gabriel is a hero of mine. And it was important to me that we did this because I love the version of this song that we do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not such a grown up that I didn't have in the back of my mind. Cause we had, you know, you have to do paperwork and pay money to use the song and on both physical media and on streaming services. So I'm like, I wonder if Peter Gabriel's ever going to hear this. Do you think since we've gone through this official channel, I wonder if he's ever going to hear it. Do you think he's going to hear it? Probably not. Probably not. I'm sure he didn't go, ooh. Yeah, he didn't look at his balance statement that month and go, ooh, 60 bucks.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Finally. He's like cashing in off this stuff. This is good.
Guys that are so free with their largesse and financial.
So when I think about it. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I got a buddy, Quinn, recently recorded a song called Robert Earl Keen, and he, it was, you know, that's the title of the song, and then he, like, tweeted at the man, and Robert Earl Keen retweeted and, like, said, check out a song. I don't know if he actually listened, but that was, like, I thought it was super cool, like, to have that interaction moment with him, like, where he's, like, actually possibly could have heard the song that he was referenced in and stuff, so... Maybe, hopefully, Peter Gabriel's on the other side. Maybe when we get this all on the...
That's right.
We'll get it on Spotify and send him a link to it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Well, he's got some sort of algorithmic bot that just singles out anytime anybody says his name. Like, you know, like Candyman.
Exactly.
Say his name in a mirror and he shows up.
Did you have something you wanted to add, Matt?
Oh, I don't know. I just started thinking about, like, when I think about, like, if we were going to ever invite someone else in or how could we do this kind of collaboration thing, I always think it would be cool to have, like a cool female vocalist come in and do something as well. And I think of, like, Annie Clark, St. Vincent, like, something like, somebody like that. Like, what would someone like that walk into our crap and go, huh, I see myself doing this and that. You know, I would love for someone just to go... Like someone like that, who is that kind of crazy of an artist to be like, oh, how do I fit in here? Because I know she could do it. And I just wonder what someone like that would, how they would feel they would best play with our kind of situation. And so I think that would be pretty intriguing. And I've never thought about that until you asked this question. And so I was like, oh my God, racking my brain. Like, what would I want to do? I think it's more about like, and it's kind of like Bill's, Peter Gabriel, what does he think about what we did? I kind of want someone to walk in and be like, oh, what will we all do together now? You know, and it'll never happen, but it could be fun. You never know.
Hearing, you know, you and a female vocal together and stuff, like, you know, it would be an interesting take on a song and stuff, hearing a little variety coming through on a recording like that. So
Yeah, I wouldn't be. Yeah, I wouldn't be. This the fact that this exists is such a surprise. I rule nothing out.
Yeah,
same. Good point.
Yeah,
I just like you guys are recording this. I got a buddy, Anthony. He's working on more country tunes and stuff. But he hit up a guy. I'm blanking on his name now. But he's like a, 14-time musician of the year kind of thing for CMAs or whatever. What and like he recorded on all those Joe Diffie records and all these like great, 90s country albums and stuff. And he's like, hey man, would you like to play on my album? And he's like, all right, yeah. And so, again, he's at home, he's got time and he's got the recording set up and lay down some, hot guitar leads on those for his album and stuff. And yeah. So that's kind of the fun too, is like with this technology, anything is possible. You hit people like, hey, would you be interested in doing this? And like, all right, well, let's make something happen. So
yeah, I agree. That's right. That's the glorious thing about technology is the way it can, enable those kinds of things.
Sure.
The bad part about it is how it can enable things that
right
maybe shouldn't have happened.
Yep.
Who can say?
Right.
Who can? Maybe.
All right. I got one more, and then we'll get on out of here. But. This is this is probably a big one too. Since you guys are obviously super fans of a lot of stuff, but is there a song you wish you wrote?
Ooh.
Is there anything that comes to mind? Like, man, that would have been a. I wish maybe tells your story a little bit, or just something that you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's one of those. And I had a buddy the other day at work. He was like, who's the greatest guitar player of all time? Who's the great? And it's like, those are impossible questions. You can never say that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, I can't stand those, like top 100 guitar players of all time. It's like, well, I don't know if you can put, Eric Johnson and Robert Johnson on the same list. They compare and contrast them as if they're doing the same thing. That all kind of never made any sense to me. I will say this, for as long as the song has been around, when I hear Pop Life by Prince and the Revolution, I imagine myself performing it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Good one.
Because it's kind of a very straightforward instrumentation. There's not a lot of fancy stuff in it. Right, like there's not a lot of virtuosic playing in it, but the texture and the sound of it is like something that even now to this, all the best Prince songs still sound like they're from the future. And that when I hear that song, I think of myself playing it for some reason. That is not a thing that happens with any other Prince song, just that one. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
But since Around the World in a Day came out, like, I mean, I'm talking about when I was a kid. That's the way I think about that song. I don't know why that is.
Hmm.
Got anything, Matt?
I'm racking my brain. I mean, there are so many like Beatles songs that just come to mind that, I mean, there's just so many amazing things that I have not ever achieved, nor could I even remotely begin to think about achieving, that I don't know. There's just so many great things out there. I don't even know, but what you're going to do is make me think about this weekend and really start going, wow, what do I wish I would? I mean, there's a part of me that wishes I would have been a part of Looks That Kill by Motley Crue when I hear that. There's it's like, oh my God. Like, when that goes into She's Got the Looks That Kill, it's just like, oh my God, they figured it all out. And I mean, so there are some things that are as like kind of raw and seemingly simplistic as that, or something as complex is something, off of the White Album that just, just makes me want to cry and wish that I would have done that. So I think I'm going to think about it. Somewhere between Motley Crue and the Beatles is my answer. I'll figure something out.
I do have to say, though, I don't think that you can. I will say this, because it's an interesting kind of thought experiment, right? It's like, this is all interesting, but ultimately you can't, I would never wish that. And I'm not trying to play both sides, but I wouldn't wish, because it changes your relationship to it in a way that's kind of irretrievable. Like, you would, like, Prince probably does not think about Pop Life the way I do, right? I'm sure that that's right. Like, it's impossible for him to have the same relationship with the song. So, but the only thing you can really do is love it and appreciate it and try and fold that sensibility into whatever your approach is going to be. But I don't wish that I sure. had written it, but I have thought about me writing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think about too, like I'm a big songwriter fan, you know, just I tend to respond more to lyrical content. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's just certain ones that is like, you know, obviously if I wrote it, it wouldn't be what it is, like you're saying, but like it does have such an impact on me. Like I wish like this was something that I was responsible for, and you know, or something like that. I could be able to share that with some other people. Mm. And stuff, you know, just like I feel like it almost tells my story and sense, you know, and stuff. Like there's one that comes to mind I think about too, like it's Will Hogue. I talk about him a lot on the show, but he's a great songwriter. He's got a song called Strong. And, you know, every time I hear it, I just, like, go thinking about my grandfather and because he was that guy that, you know, depicted in the song, this hardworking blue-collar guy and stuff. So, you know, there's things like that. Like, I just, you know, put myself in that situation, in those shoes, like, where I'm, like, I definitely could, you know, relate that much to the song that could be mine.
Yeah, well, that's the all of the best songs are like, oh my, they totally get me.
Yep.
This is that's exactly what I was thinking. I do think that I'm kind of a big believer in the idea that the things that determine your reactions to any kind of any piece of work of any kind, be it a story or a film or a TV show or a lot of that is couched in like your personal experience, and whether, you know, this is not a revolutionary idea, but I think that there are songs that I couldn't stand when I heard them, like literally I went no thanks, or were at the very least indifferent to, that now are like among my favorite songs. Like there are a lot of things where like the first time I heard it, I didn't get it, or I wasn't in the right frame of mind to receive it, and then you hear it in the right context, or you hear it in the right in the right moment in your life, then all of a sudden this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, sometimes you got to live a little life to understand these, you know, these stories that come through these songs. You know, it's just like you're as a 16-year-old kid compared to you know a 40-year-old man or whatever. You're not
exactly right.
You're totally different people. So you know, just but yeah, it's kind of the fun of there's definitely I've done that several times where there's records like you know, nope, not for me, and then but they're so well celebrated, and I'm like, there's got to be something here that I'm missing for, you know, whatever. Mm. And I've gone back and I revisited, and now I'm like, love them. So like, just like that. Yeah. So it's just like, it's just kind of weird how, but sometimes I don't know, it's just a strange thing.
Yeah, that's the magic. Yeah, that's the magic of it. That's why, you know, that's why people still bother.
Right.
Right. If like, you know,
if somebody, you know, if you want to use the Beatles as an example, if after the Beatles, everybody went, okay, rock and roll's finished. We're done with rock. We finished that one.
Close it down.
It's like, okay, that's as good as it's going to get. We're fine. Then, you know, but that's not how it works, because you keep revisiting things, and there are all kinds of songs that I listen to in a different context now. And there are songs that are among my favorite bands. And this might be slightly embarrassing or a little bit weird to admit, but with the first time I heard 311, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Me and Carl were sitting in a car and literally bought 311 music and put it in. Then I went, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. I see what they're going for, you know?
Yeah.
And then in a very short order, they became one of my favorite bands of all time. Like it's, you know, and it's like every single thing I've ever heard from them is like, it's like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to listen to it. You have to be open. The same thing happened with Guster.
Yeah.
The first time I heard Guster, I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then I kept like kind of kept coming up and kept coming back around to it. And Luca Brasi actually covers a Guster song.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the name of the tune? I can't remember it.
Satellite.
That's the one. Right. And so, you know, but that's one of my favorite songs. And the first time I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, cool. Yeah, I see what they're gonna do. Okay. You know, so. Yeah, but if you're in the right mindset and you're in the right moment in your life, you can music can impact you in a way that literally nothing else can. That's the magic of it. That's why that's why people still do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are just kind of like enhancers. You know, it's like if you listen, if you're like already sad and depressed, and you listen to this one is going to, you know, or the same vice versa. If you're already, you know, one to kind of feel up, you can, there's great party songs, but it's like, if you're not, if you're sad and you play, try to play a party song, it's not going to work. You know, it's just like, I'm not into that. Right.
Right.
But it's like, so you definitely have to be in the right, you know, frame of mind for some of these records and stuff. So, but yeah, man, we can get plugged in again on the social media, Facebook and Instagram for more updates. And, I don't even think we've said the name of the record. I think we've just referred to it.
That's right. Pre-fader, post-fader.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't honestly remember how it happened. It was something that we were talking about. And then, and obviously the fact that, that there is a line between, before and now, like, you know, pre-pandemic, certainly things have changed. I mean, right. For, you know, in all kinds of different ways that aren't even directly related to the virus itself. And, so that was kind of, we were trying to find something to say that indicated like that dividing line, and we'd already used the Norris division. So we had,
yeah. So we had to come up with something else. So, but yeah, that's exactly it. You know, remember,
I think I was literally, I might have literally been reading something about like signal paths or something. I don't really remember how it.
I remember
came
it up, as being something technical, because we were pushing for like a, I think pre and post was definitely, those were two word or two things that we were kicking around, and the but that idea before and after, that kind of idea. I think that was, that's where it came from. But I love that it became this kind of weird abstract phrase of pre fader, post fader, and. Just became like a working thought and then a title.
Yeah. And I kind of dug the, I remember digging that it's a little bit inscrutable, and it kind of sounds like, you know, it's one of those things that simultaneously kind of doesn't mean anything at all and actually could mean something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, this could be maybe just bullshit, but also I think you could make the case for it meaning something. So, well, we'll just go with that. And I think even Mike was like, no, wait a second. I thought we were going to call it early retirement. And, because that was the original Dropbox link that had the first, the Stand Down, the King, and, the Peter Gabriel cut was labeled early retirement sessions, because that's what we were going to call it at the time. Right. But then that was, you know, 10 years ago. So.
Yeah, and then we kind of like thematically started pulling some things together that we were like, okay, this is a little more grown up. That's kind of funny. And then this is a little more mature. And then, but then we ended up naming our little record label Early Retirement Records. So
that's right.
There you go.
There was, I wanted to do the cover of us on a fishing boat with a Luca Brasi logo on the stern, all that,
funny.
All that jazz.
Just didn't quite fit.
Yeah. 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 That, and we couldn't find a boat. So.
Well,
or a
lake. True. Well, yeah, that's true. I know.
Well, very cool, guys. This has been a ton of fun to getting to hang and getting to talk about this album and the hard work that went into making this all possible. And but like I said, I can't wait, man. It's gonna be a fun night to see you guys up there and trying to figure out how to play these songs live for everybody. And
yeah, we think that'll be fun too. Definitely.
There's ground floors descend is one of the songs that is very outside of the mold, and. That's the end has, well, that and the end of See the Sky too. I was like, this is going to take everybody singing, so get warmed up. Right. Okay, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's going to take all of us plus maybe another person to sing all of this. So,
Well, there's, and that's some of the fun of music too. Like, I love albums and everything, but like, you know, a lot of people go to live shows because it's, you know, because of the live experience that is created. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily sound just like the album cut, you know, so
I agree.
There's, you can take some creative liberties with the live version of these songs and stuff, and that's what's fun about it too, and keeps people coming back to the live show and stuff.
So. I agree, and I do the same thing too when I see people like, oh, they don't, oh, they do it this, you know, they're doing it this way because blah. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, but anyway, it's gonna be a cool night either way, and like I said, I'm excited to pick up a vinyl copy in the fall, so
nice.
That'd be cool, man. But cheers to you guys all your work and man.
Cheers to you. Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
But thank you guys, and I say we do this again soon sometime. Man.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
It's a fun hang. Yeah. So all right. Bye, everybody.
All right.
See you soon. Bye.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.